All right, we're going to call the meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Tuesday, May 16th, 2017. For the good of the order, we are not going to work House Bill 2893 today. And the clock in the back is wrong. So this is the items of business to start the committee. We are going to start with a work session on House Bill 3253.
What? Madam Chair, which one are we on?
Never mind. We're going to start with an LC. So I'm going to open a work session for the introduction of a committee measure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move LC 4398 to be introduced as a committee measure.
Vice Chair McLean has moved LC 4398 to be introduced as a committee measure. As per normal, support of the introduction of the measure does not show support for the underlying bill.
Just going to ask that question.
So, Madam Chair, via discussion, it seems that this is related to the tobacco master settlement agreement, and we're increasing the authority of the Attorney General to crack down on contraband cigarettes. So I haven't read the bill. I'm willing to support it, the introduction of it, and we'll see what happens after that. Do we know who requested this bill? Oh, it's at the request of Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum.
Yeah, I know her.
Well, that stands to reason.
Yeah. All right. Any further discussion? Any objections? All right. Motion passes. Close the work session on the introduction of committee members measures. Now I will open a work session on House Bill 3253.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3253 was heard on May 11th. The measure, we at that time adopted the -5 amendment, so I will call your attention to the explanation of the -5, which replaces the underlying measure and establishes priority for commissions business enterprise program to operate vending machines, snack bars, micro markets, cafes, convenience stores, espresso carts, food trucks in counties, towns, cities, local governments, villages, and municipalities in order to put more blind people to work. It maintains preference for operating cafes or cafeterias. Commission may supply materials, equipment, or machinery to operate vending facility or allow subcontracting with third party. Clarifies the law to allow subcontracting with approval by the commission. Commission will provide list of pre-approved subcontractors. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we did receive a fiscal impact statement that was indeterminate as to the fiscal impact, as the impact on the different and variety of agencies could be next to nothing or could potentially have an impact, so they were unable to determine it at this time. Madam Chair, we have a no revenue impact on the -5 amendment.
Thank you. Take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3253 as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved House Bill 3253 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Same thing. 1 second. No discussion.
Okay. Just checking. And I will, committee members, let you know that the members who are working, who have been working on this bill, it's my understanding they will continue to work on this bill in the Senate.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we will continue. I think these amendments actually took care of a lot of the issues, but there's a few more minor details that we'll take care of over there. And if it's appropriate, we'd like to co-carry that together. Kenny Geyer up first, obviously, and then myself.
All right. Any further discussion? Any objection? Not. Motion passes. Carrier, Alyssa Kenny Geyer, Jody Hack. Close the work session on House Bill 3253. Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3361.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3361 was originally heard on April 25th. The measure directs State Chief Information Officer to appoint chief data officer to maintain web portal for publication of data of state agencies, directs chief data officer to establish open data standard and publish technical standards manual for state agencies publishing data on portal, establishes specific date for state agencies to comply with open data standard and technical standards manual and publish data on web portal. There is an emergency clause on the measure. You have a -2 amendment, Madam Chair, which removes the emergency clause, and the chief data officer shall publish first technical standards manual on or before November 5th, 2018, establishes operative date of May 1st, 2019 for release of publishable data on the new web portal by state agencies and information management standards by state agencies. You have a -6 amendment. The -6 amendment exempts materials of commercial value or materials that could reduce agencies' competitive advantage from definition of publishable data, permits chief information officer to adopt rules to allow agency to request exemption from releasing data when release of data was subject information system to substantial risk of cyber attack, or an agency is purchasing software or vendor services and industry practices do not support downstream processing and dissemination of activities. And the -6 amendment also, the requirement to maintain web portal for publication of data of state agencies, establish open data standard, and publish technical standards manual for state agencies does not supersede state agencies' obligations under public records law. Madam Chair, you have a fiscal statement on the -2 and on the -6. The measure does need to go to Ways and Means, as this does create a new position in the state CIO's office for the chief data officer.
All right.
Which one are you removing? So, Madam Chair, I move the -2 amendment to House Bill 3361.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the -2 amendment to House Bill 3361. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 33. Madam Chair, I move the -6 amendment to House Bill 3361.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the -6 amendment into House Bill 3361. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3361 as amended with a due pass recommendation and the measure be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair McLean has moved House Bill 3361 as amended with a due pass recommendation and that the measure be referred to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes. I will close the work session on House Bill 3361.
Madam Chair, can we stand these for just a minute?
So now, okay, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2813.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2813 was originally heard on May 4th, at which time we had a replacement measure amendment before you. We now have the -4 version of that amendment that was discussed on May 4th. It prohibits broadband internet access service provider from disclosing, selling, or permitting access to customers' personal information, except if customer gives express consent to disclose information. Customer may revoke consent at any time. The broadband internet access service provider must provide clear, conspicuous, and non-deceptive notice to customer before customer subscribes to service. The bias may not refuse to provide service, charge higher prices for service, or offer discount on service contingent upon customer signing a disclosure agreement. Prohibits bias to disclose personal information for specific reasons. Permits the broadband internet access service provider to disclose personal information for specific reasons, including billing and collection, initiating or rendering service, protection of customer, or the bias against fraudulent access of service, complying with court order, or for emergency situation requiring precise location of customer. Requires establishment of administrative, technical, and physical safeguards to protect customers' personal information, specifies the safeguard requirements, provides private right of action against the bias if customers' personal information is unlawfully sold, disclosed, or made accessible, creates an 11-member task force on broadband security, specifies membership, charge, and reporting requirements, and is to be staffed by the Legislative Policy and Research Office. There is an emergency clause. This measure does come with the -4 amendment and a fiscal statement, as the measure does need to go to Ways and Means with the creation of the task force.
And do we have, so we've got a couple of folks here to answer questions. We didn't have this amendment in front of us. We only had a draft of it when we had the hearing, so we wanted to make sure we had some folks here to explain. So we're going to start with Jim Halpert. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi. You can go ahead and start testifying. Just be sure to put your name on the record.
Thank you very much. My name is Jim Halpert, and I am the co-chair of the Global and U.S. Privacy Practice at DLA Piper, which is a national law firm. I advise a lot of internet companies, including ISPs, on privacy compliance, and have, on behalf of a coalition called the State Privacy and Security Coalition, helped to draft a lot of laws in the state privacy area. I have only just seen a copy last night of the -4 amendments and understand that this is a work session and that kindly the committee has given us the courtesy of providing some testimony on the amendments. We haven't been asked to work on them and really are digesting them quickly. I will note that if Oregon passes this law, it would be the first state in the nation to pass a law in this area, and that the federal regulation that this would supposedly stand and replace never went into effect. So this is literally unprecedented in terms of the scope of regulation of internet service providers. And it has been voted down in state after state where it's been proposed this year, including most recently in Washington State and Minnesota. And we understand that Nevada is going to reject this approach and do something more like California law in this area. Specifically, the issues that I've been able to see with the -4 amendments, while they're very well intentioned, include regulating information that is not in the least bit sensitive. That includes customer name and address, which is in a bit freely available online and in phone books. It includes information like the IP address that a customer sends with a communication, which is freely available to every website on the internet that a customer would visit using the internet. It also includes the device identifier, which again is often commonly disclosed. Treating all this information as sensitive is really odd because it's not treated as sensitive in any other context. It also would be required to be secured under this bill and with some risk of litigation or enforcement. And the entities that need to protect these data that are really not in the least bit sensitive are critical infrastructure providers, and so this would distort the security spend of these companies trying to secure and building compliance mechanisms for information, also things like demographic data associated with a customer. Some of this information is sensitive and it would appropriately be regulated, but most of it is not. And this is, again, a very much an outlier in terms of the way that both federal and state privacy laws work. In some respects, this goes beyond the FCC rules in prohibiting offering a discount to a customer who gives consent for use of this information. In some cases, this will drive up the cost of service in higher cost areas in the state, particularly rural areas, and that seems a rather inflexible approach. The FCC simply required notice and completely banned providing discounts. There are key terms in here that are not defined, like what is geolocation data, that I think would be quite confusing for regulated entities to figure out how to comply. It also seems to me that having a task force convene while also enacting this law does not provide adequate time to fix problems with the laws. The law would go into effect very soon after the task force had finished meeting, and there wouldn't be enough time to fix what I expect to be some significant problems that are found with the language. This is a very complex issue. It's something that will be addressed at the federal level, and both the FCC has pledged to enforce its broadband privacy principles, which were in effect and were used for enforcement before the CP&I rules came through. And when the net neutrality order, the FCC is reconsidering goes away, then the Federal Trade Commission, which regulates the entire Internet ecosystem, will have enforcement authority over ISP data practices. I'll also add that Oregon is about to pass a consumer protection law amendment that would make inaccurate statements in privacy policies that are materially inadequate, inaccurate, a deceptive trade practice, and all the major ISPs in Oregon have pledged not to sell personally identifiable web history information of customers. So if any ISP were to do that, they would be subject to enforcement by the Attorney General's office, simply with law that is on the verge of passing, my understanding, in the next day or two. So there is zero risk that any major ISP will sell web browsing data because they've all committed not to, and the AG's office will have enforcement authority as the FCC does now, and the Federal Trade Commission will in probably a year or two. So there isn't really a problem here. While I understand that there's concern, there's not an actual problem of ISPs being unregulated, and I think this bill would overregulate and is more complicated than is really appropriate to enact at the last minute in this session. That said, this is obviously an important issue and one that I think a task force could certainly look at to come up with suggestions for next year after the federal regulatory picture is a little bit clearer. Are there any questions I can answer?
Any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Barreto.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Jim. Your concerns that you threw out there, I think, were identical to mine. And I do believe it's commendable to try and protect privacy, but would you, I think as you said the last statement there, that you would recommend a task force to start looking into this and basically scrapping this bill?
I would recommend that the task force part of the bill be passed now, and that the committee benefit from the analysis that the task force will do and look at this issue closely next year when the picture of federal regulation is clearer and when the AG's office has and can enforce any ISP deviation from promises not to sell web browsing information or any deviation that's material from their privacy policies.
Thank you.
Can I answer any other questions?
I think there are no more questions from the committee. So thank you very much, Jim, for spending your time with us.
I appreciate it, and I hope that my views are of some use to the committee as it decides what to do. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right. All right. And Pam Dixon, come on up.
Okay, are we on? All right. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, thanks for your time today and the opportunity to discuss the issues before us that are so important. So, I just want to make
Pam, can you put your name on the record?
Oh, yes. My name is Pam Dixon, perfect. Executive Director of the World Privacy Forum. So, I just want to make very, very brief points here, and then I'll be very happy to answer any questions. So, the first point is this. There is a gap in privacy protections. So we just heard my colleague, Jim Halpert, and someone I know and have worked with on these issues before. There is, at this time, no federal body that has full jurisdiction over internet privacy. It just does not exist. The FCC does not is not going to do broadband privacy. As we know, the rules were rolled back. The Federal Trade Commission is bound by something called Magnuson-Moss, which means they cannot proactively make new rules. They just can't. What they can do is enforce privacy policies as to unfair and deceptive practices, which is what would happen at the Oregon level as well. However, being able to enforce what someone has written in a privacy policy is not at all the same as making proactive rules that internet service providers have to follow. Totally different ball of wax there. Secondly, privacy protections are good for business. So one of the issues that has occurred since the rollback of the broadband privacy FCC rules is Consumers have been expressing unease and concern, great concern, about what's happening to their information. And a very respected poll done by BNA found that 95% of Americans surveyed for this were uneasy and concerned about their data that was being collected, in especially the mobile environment. That's a lot of people, and I have to tell you, I've been working in privacy for 20 years, and we've never seen pushback like that. Never. Not anything like that. Not on any other issue other than one, which was identity theft. Whole different ball of wax there. But the other thing that's really good for business is that it provides clear rules of the road for Oregonians and for Oregonian businesses. It's clear, there's no guesswork, and it actually is easier for them to comply. And then finally, ISP protections are good for consumers. And I want to go back to the protection of what I call the digital ecosystem. We have to trust our companies today who have built a digital ecosystem. Without that trust, it is not sustainable for businesses in the long term to manage and work with data. We all know that companies have to access data. We know this. But they have to be trusted companies. Consumers have to trust these companies. To have trust, you have to have transparency. You absolutely must. Right now, people feel like they don't know what's happening to their information. And I mean, I'll give you some very good examples. We answer phone calls all the time from people who have privacy concerns. And one of the chief privacy concerns that we've heard for several years is on mobile data. And this is echoed in online and offline. On the way here, I was getting a coffee, and someone who knows my coffee habit asked me, oh, what are you doing today? I said, I'm working on ISP privacy. And she lit up. She was a digital native, probably 18 or 19 years old, and she said, yay, take the creep out of the technology. And technology does not need to be creepy, and in fact, I do not want it to be creepy. I want it to be good for consumers. I want it to be good for businesses. So we have in front of ourselves an important moment in history where the state of Oregon can work to fill the gap. I wanted to respond just a bit to Mr. Halbert's arguments. So the U.S. Federal Trade Commission is not poised to address broadband privacy now, and there is no assurance whatsoever that it would in the future. Should it be given a clear sailing by the U.S. Congress to do so, it would still be enormously limited, and they would only have the ability to enforce privacy policies. They could not make rules. They don't have that authority unless it goes through that evil Magnuson-Moss procedure. I wrote written testimony that explains that. It's really tedious, but if you want the details, it's there. In terms of this being an outlier, I disagree with that. I worked for a year and a half on the FCC privacy rules, and industry worked for a year and a half on those rules, and this is not an outlier. So I must disagree with that. And there are all sorts of other things we can say about this, but at the bottom, and at the bottom line is this. Almost 15 years ago, I worked really hard on identity theft regulation, and I'll never forget the hearings I used to go to for that. I'd come in, I'd say, look, we really need to do something about identity theft because there are a lot of consumer harms. Consumers need to trust the financial system. And the opposition would come in and say, you know what, this is too hard. We can't do this. These are outlier bills, same arguments. And fortunately, states, one after one after one, took action to protect consumers in very reasonable ways. This bill is reasonable, and it's incredibly necessary. We have a substantial gap in protections. We also have, at the same time, a substantial gap in consumer trust. We can close that gap. This bill is reasonable, and it's timely, and I urge you to act. And I welcome your questions.
Any questions? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this task force was to be formed and then come to conclusions by the end of 2017, and then the bill be implemented in 2018. Do you think something this complicated, you could work out the issues between now and the end of this year?
Yes, and the reason I'm very certain of that is because these issues have been absolutely pounded into the ground over the last year and a half. I've I've had probably 4-hour meetings each week for the past year and a half over this exact issue, and so has industry. This has been an issue that's been bubbling up due to the Title II problems under the FCC. I mean, these are long-standing issues, and you know, this is one of those situations where we know where the pain points are, and the FCC rules really, I thought, did a very good job of providing something reasonable. They weren't perfect. I wanted more, actually. I think industry wanted less. But at the end of the day, we were all pretty uncomfortable in terms of getting everything we wanted. But I think everyone could also say that it was a principled point in the middle that we all arrived at. And this bill does the same thing. So a lot of the details, I agree, it is complex. But I do also agree that over the past year and a half, we've really worked through those details, and we really know where the center of this argument is. You know, Jim mentioned something about IP address and also the mobile device identifier. You know, this is not considered to be anonymous information anymore. Unfortunately, in our data ecosystem, this information is now very much tied to who we are. You can identify someone based off of their IP address and also especially off of their unique mobile identifier. And we need to act to protect this information. There's way too much health data that's connected with this. Anytime someone's in a healthcare provider setting and they've got their phone turned on, all of this goes through, and then mobile app usage is the same thing. So I agree with you that it's complex. I agree that, you know, in terms of having a task force, it's not the slowest task force I've ever heard of. It's not the shortest either. But we've worked through these issues. We know where the center is.
So we're going to meet again early next year, and if you had a task force, I mean, just to be prudent, you know, rather than commit to something that you don't know whether you're going to be able to do or not, don't you think it would be prudent to develop a task force now, have them come up with their findings by the end of the year, and then next session, early next year, then you submit a bill based on the findings that they came up with?
I think that that is certainly an approach that has value, but I also think that right now we have a substantial gap, and there is enormous public angst and anger regarding what happened at the FCC. And there were clear rules that were written, they were agreed upon, and they had been debated in a public process at length. And through so much work, I can't even tell you the work. Actually, I can. You do this work, so you know it was a long process. And people who meant well and were well-intentioned on every side really came together. And I do believe that because that process has taken place, we know, again, where the pain points are, and we know what the arguments are. And in terms of the technical approaches that are necessary, we know those too. There's some new research that has come out that's only made the case more important in terms of not to get too far in the weeds, but we do know that one of the issues here is, okay, can so-called aggregate data that's often used and released to the public from broadband providers, or especially mobile providers, can this data ever be re-identified? And we now, as of this February, we now know the research is in through this lovely algorithm called the Hungarian algorithm. You can actually re-identify people's data that is coming through mobile apps, and it's above 90% identifiability. That's huge. This is not anonymous data anymore. So that is the only, I'd say, pain point that hasn't been fully addressed, and the way it wasn't addressed was something actually I really wanted in the FCC rules, which is more detail paid to aggregate data, which is really, we can't call that anonymous anymore. That's the one pain point I felt like in terms of privacy rules that weren't completely covered. But in terms of, you know, are the rules too strong? They're not. And I think a task force may be able to add, you know, detail on the aggregate kind of data and whatnot. But the rules as they stand that Oregon has come up with, it's a very, very reasonable bill. It is, it's not an outlier whatsoever. And I don't see obstacles that would require it to undergo further revision.
One last follow-up. So every other state that has considered this and presented a bill has rejected the bill. Do we know?
Not actually true.
Do we know if they have also set up task force similar to what is being considered here and are working on this project to where we wouldn't be the only state going it alone?
Yeah, so it's not true that all of the states have rejected the legislation. That's not true at all. So there are a number of states right now that are considering new legislation in this area, and a lot of these bills look very similar to either the FCC old rules or these. This is not an outlier. I'm wondering how much I can say about what I know here. My understanding is that some of these bills
check
are going
privacy
to
privacy.
It's not privacy, it's other states' privacy. My understanding is actually a little bit different than Mr. Halbert's. My understanding is that some of the bills are going to pass. So, you know, as things develop, we're going to know the answers to these questions, but it's not my understanding.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do. Hi. When you say re-identify,
yes,
you're talking about anonymous information that because of commonalities, they have a high rate of identifying where it originated?
That's amazingly technical, but yes. I'm not used to people really understanding that term. That is usually the case.
Okay, then.
The technical term would be high sparsity data set, but what happens with mobile data in this space is a little bit different. So just because of the way the network structure works, you have cell phones that are just going, hi, I'm here, to the network towers, and they're just constantly communicating. And what the research has unambiguously shown is that because of just this, the way that mobile networks have been built, when a person has, for example, a mobile app installed, that information is sending precise or a variety of geolocation data. And even if you have information that is very common, you've got that device identifier and you've got other identifiers. So in mobile data sets that are or used to be deemed as quote-unquote aggregate anonymous data sets, what the new research has found is that even when the data is kind of, you know, like very similar to a lot of other data, it's not, you know, really unique data that stands out in the way you were describing, that it's incredibly identifiable. Data that comes from cell towers is identifiable between 70 and 90% of the time. But data that's coming from mobile apps is identifiable 98% of the time, which is insanely high for identifiability. So the research is important because it really wiped away our understanding of aggregate data re-identifiability.
May I follow up? That sounds like technology is moving very fast. And isn't the best argument then what the previous witness had is not necessarily that Oregon's an outlier, because that's debatable based on what you're saying, but that Oregon could become an island in the respect of technologies moving so fast that static statutory law at a state level actually could put the state at a technology disadvantage, which is why we should leave this to the FCC. Isn't that the best argument?
I wish it were. I wish that were the case. I mean, it would be great if the FCC would take care of this problem. It would. But
I guess if I might follow up, that's not really the issue. And I understand that you disagree with the FCC. And maybe in a different administration or in a different chairmanship of the FCC, you might agree. But from the principal standpoint of a technology advancement. Shouldn't this, isn't this exactly what the FCC is supposed to do, and that we could be creating, in essence, isolationism in a world that's moving faster than this legislature? And isn't that the best argument against you, is that while everything you say may be right, it nevertheless puts us in a disadvantage if we create this digital wall at our border that causes the best and most amazing technology to halt?
Oh, I totally understand your argument. And in some cases, creating digital islands does happen with technology-specific regulation that is really ill-advised. I have to tell you, I don't support that kind of legislation either. And I think that that type of, you know, island, you know, let no technology be an island, was very well considered in terms of this bill and what's been happening at the federal level. You know, you cannot regulate the technology. That's almost always a losing argument to say, okay, let's take this technology and really, you know, put some strictures around it. Sometimes you have to do it. When you look at some of the rules around how the internet operates, the what I would call the plumbing of the internet, I think it's reasonable to say, look, we want not the pipes, let's not regulate the pipes, but let's talk about the information that's flowing through the pipes instead, and let's work with those data flows. That's what this bill does. So the FCC and the state of Oregon has worked very hard to go, okay, we're not touching the pipes, we're keeping our hands off the pipes. There's really no pipes discussion here. But the data flows, yes. And that really, when you look at privacy theory, that's where it is today. It's there in Europe, it's there increasingly in Asia, and it is very much there here in the United States. It's all about, okay, data flows. Let's look at the data flow. And we cannot control collection anymore. You know, the old, you know, housing, education, and welfare privacy principles, which became what's called the Fair Information Practices, wonderful, wonderful principles. One of their principles was, okay, let's control collection of information. Well, that's kind of out the door. Do you know what I mean? How do we control ISPs from collecting our data? It's not feasible, not really. We're in a different era now. In a different era needs different rules. Right now, those rules don't exist. But the rules need to be about the data and how the data is handled, and that's what these rules are about. It's important. You know, in the privacy world that I work in, there are all sorts of different opinions, but this is the one thing that I think every privacy expert really can or should agree on, which is we need to start talking about how to reasonably make rules on how data is used. Because if we don't, consumers end up in a position where they lack trust in our technology. They want to know where their data is going. And I really meant it when I said, look, we've got to take the creepy out of the technology. We need to be able to use our technologies. I love technology. I am a complete 100% geek, as anyone will tell you. I know how to protect myself because I am a geek. You know, I'll use a VPN and other things, but what about all the people who don't use those tools? What about places where those tools don't reach? There are all sorts of instances where there are things I can't control about my broadband privacy, and it's frustrating. In the written testimony, I talk about a practice called data append. It's very, very common.
Data what?
Data append. We won't go there, but it's there in the testimony, the written testimony. So, I mean, there are so many data flow issues that really do need to be attended to. The bill has done a really great job of finding a middle central spot. And this is not a, I hope it's not a partisan issue, I really do. It's an issue where I do believe that businesses need to have clear rules so they have clear boundaries for their innovation. And it's not innovation on the technology, it's okay. here's the stop signs, here's the go signs, and let's go. Let's use this data. Let's use it appropriately. Here's what we can do with aggregate data. Here's what we can do with identifiable data. Let's be respectful and earn the trust of our customers. And let's have more customers. Let's have customers use our services more. This is, ISPs are the plumbing of our new economy. And it has to be trusted. We have to have trusted data conduits. We really do. It's not an option. And this has become more clear to me with the really, I thought, quite surprising feedback to what happened at the FCC. And that's why all these states are considering bills. And that did not exist before. It's reasonable. It's appropriate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One more question. I don't believe this is a partisan issue. I believe everyone wants protection. So would you consider this undertaking being more or less complicated than the Cover Oregon website?
Okay, well, that is one difficult question because Cover Oregon, that's the Obamacare website for Oregon, correct? So I'm not familiar with the specifics about Cover Oregon website. I'm really familiar with the HHS specifics and the problems there. About 50% of my expertise has been in health privacy, so I've done a lot of work in the area. One of the biggest problems with the Cover websites was just those were actual, honest to heavens, technical problems. Those technical problems had solutions, but given that it hadn't been done before, there were a lot of things that had to be worked through. I would hope that those have all been since laid to bed. I would say that in terms of the data flows that we're talking about, it's a bit of apples and oranges. And the reason I would say is this, is when you're talking about the covered entity data, you're really talking about data flows that are covered under the sectoral policy of HIPAA, the HIPAA privacy and security rules and guidelines. Those are incredibly complex. The Electronic Communications Privacy Act and HIPAA are among the two most complex laws that we have in the United States, absent one other, which is the Violence Against Women Act. Those are really complicated pieces of legislation and regulation. And complying with all that healthcare data flow, they needed to do an awful lot to do that. This type of area, it's obviously it falls under a different statutory regime. It's a different sector, and the sectoral regulation is different. If I might just make a quick comparison. So if you think about personally identifiable health information, it is the most sensitive. Let's say someone is revealing an HIV/AIDS status, and they're revealing it directly to a website like that for the purposes of coverage. Compare that with, for example, a person who has installed a mobile app. Maybe that mobile app is going to take diabetes readings for a person who has a chronic disease. And unbeknownst to them, that mobile app is collecting that data. And even though they said their data is aggregate, the data is being re-identified on the back end and then shared with data brokers and then sold on data broker lists. They're really different. The data problems are different.
Yeah, I didn't need you to get into the specifics. I was just asking about the size of the and the difficulty of the endeavor.
Okay, now I understand you better. So it is different in apples and oranges. It is, a lot has been worked out already.
Madam Chair, I move the -4 amendments to House Bill 2813.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the -4 amendments into House Bill 2813. Is there any discussion? Representative Bredo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I don't agree with the whole concept, really. I do agree with the task force, and I do agree that we need privacy, but I can't vote for the amendment either, so I'll be no.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Sam, can you call the roll? Thank you.
Representative Bredo?
No.
Representative Hatch?
Yes.
Representative Holy?
Excused.
Representative Tanner?
He just stepped outside. I'll go get him.
Sorry, I didn't realize he just left.
Representative Note?
Yes.
Representative Smith Warner?
Aye.
Buying time for Kenimer.
Yes.
Yes.
Chair Williamson?
Yes. Yeah, I won't gab, I'll go.
He's excused.
All right, he's excused, Kenimer. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2813 as amended with a due pass recommendation and the measure be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair McLean has moved House Bill 2813 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the measure be referred to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections?
Well, since I objected to the amendment, I don't mind passing it out of the committee, but I would still be, I'll just be a no. I'll be consistent all the way through.
Thank you. Great, thank you. Further objections? All right, motion passes. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2813. Are we going to reconsider? Okay, colleagues. I'm going to reopen a work session on 3253.
And let me talk. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, we had a dash six amendment. We weren't sure we were going to have the paperwork to move it. It has come in. I know that's the preferred amendment by the stakeholders and the representative Hack and Representative Kenny Geyer. So we are going to reconsider the bill, remove the amendment, readopt the sixth amendment, move it back out. So we've got five motions before you, starting with first to suspend the rules to reconsider the vote on the measure.
Madam Chair Williamson, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 3253.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote to House Bill 3253. Are there any objections? Not, the rules are suspended.
Chair Williamson, I move we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 3253 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved to reconsider the vote by which House Bill 3253 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes. House Bill 3253 is once again before the committee.
And Chair Williamson, I move to reconsider the vote that the committee adopted the dash five amendment.
Vice Chair McLean has moved to reconsider the vote that the committee adopted the dash five amendment. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Not, the measure is back before us in its original form.
Madam Chair, I move the dash six amendment to House Bill 3253.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the dash six amendment to House Bill 3253. Is there any discussion? Are there any objection? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3253 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved House Bill 3253 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes. Carriers will be Representative Kenny Geyer, Representative Hack. I will close the work session on House Bill 3253. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2946.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2946 was originally heard on March 28th. The measure expands definition of state agency for purpose of Oregon Transparency website. Definition of state agency would include semi-independent state agencies, public universities, including Oregon Health Science University, Oregon Tourism Commission, Oregon Film and Video Office, Travel Information Council, Children's Trust Fund, Oregon Corrections Enterprise, SAFE, Oregon Utility Notification Center, and other designated public corporations. The measure comes to you. We have a no revenue impact on the measure.
Come on down, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Williamson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ryan Hageman. I am the Vice President and General Counsel of Western Oregon University, here speaking on behalf of all seven public universities. Also, for the record, because of the overlap, I was the Vice Chancellor and General Counsel of the Oregon University System before it dissolved. Just wanted to put on the record a few concerns with the bill. We believe it runs a little bit contrary to Senate Bill 270 for the public universities, which extended a status of kind of the unit of government that's a little bit different. So this would bring us back into the definition of state agency, which we resisted. We also note that the current Oregon Transparency website has the mechanics to allow for other public bodies to have their information displayed. So there's a process and subsection of the statute of the Oregon Transparency website that allows links to our websites. And so people can, when they're on the Oregon Transparency website, can have links to these other unique types of public bodies and get information about budgets, expenditures, public meetings, public records, and the like. And so we would prefer from the university standpoint that that the promise of Senate Bill 270 remain and that we use the mechanisms currently in place to demonstrate our transparency to the people of Oregon.
For the record, Phil Donovan here on behalf of Oregon Health and Science University. You know, the underlying statute is a kind of a challenging aspect of this bill. If you look at that, it says to provide the information with no additional cost. And the challenge, of course, is that we envision that there will be cost arise in getting all of the information that's required by the statute up on the transparency website. For example, the underlying statute requires that we provide the information in the format and manner that the state chief information officer requires, which we're not part of that system, so this would create additional cost for OHSU. Plus, we envision a lot of challenges because you have to put contracts up online as under the legislation, and there's concern about HIPAA exposure and violations and how it could get pretty labor intensive. And that's outlined in the fiscal statement that's been provided to the committee. I don't want to talk too much about HIPAA because I'll get over my skis quickly. Long story short, the challenge that we're facing with this legislation is because it says at no additional cost, you know, you don't spend any money putting that information up, but if we don't comply with the legislation because there's a cost, then we're clearly going to miss the spirit of the law that you're considering here. So maybe we can work with the bill sponsor to work with us to get something along the lines of within existing resources and streamline some of the requested information because the transparency website is designed for state agencies and basically for uploading straight from DAS into the website, and these entities are all outside that system, so it's not, you know, the statute was really written for those state agencies, if you will. Also, along the same lines as what Ryan articulated, this bill would define OHSU as a state agency, and we would like this legislation to recognize OHSU as a public corporation that is consistent with our other statutes. And finally, I'll point out that OHSU is, our website is linked on the transparency website and always has been. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Dave Barenberg from SAFE Corporation, Oregon's not-for-profit, publicly chartered workers' compensation provider. And we share the same concerns of Ryan and Phil flanking me in regard to being defined in as a public, as a state agency, which has been currently a challenge in state law, trying to separate out what the specific functions are that public corporations were set up to do the purposes that they do. For us, some of the challenges, in addition to the ones mentioned, are just that a lot of material that we deal with are sensitive business records that are protected under 192.501.34, just a specific carved out exemption that says that business records that are of the type that are not customarily provided by the business competitors of SAFE are protected records. And so we have the issue of just through all of our contracts, redactions, and other time-consuming changes. And it is sort of a conundrum. When we had our folks looking at what's the cost of this, they said, well, if there's no cost, you know, if it costs anything, then you don't have to do it. So we don't have to do it then. But if we do it, there are significant costs and time and resources that need to be expended. Additionally, our financial reporting and our contract reporting is, as Phil said, for his entity is very different. We're in different computer programming and other systems that would require additional work to try to separate out some of the data. For example, just on addresses of vendors, because the way our system works is our employees that we pay reimbursements to are vendors in our system, and that would expose addresses, which is then needed to meet one of the conditions of the bill to say where are you spending your contract dollars and things like that. So with that, I'm happy to stop talking and answer any questions.
Erin, do you want to go ahead?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just will call your attention to, we did get a fiscal statement on the measure. It is largely indeterminate because of the permissive nature, but there was two pieces that were pointed out by the fiscal analyst, one being with regards to OHSU and the potential costs regarding patient information, estimating an upfront cost to them of $50,000 to $100,000, in addition to additional FTE to comply with submitting material to the website. In addition, the increased workload and the unknown increased workload, because it is permissive to the state CIO, they potentially would need an additional FTE, provided all these entities complied with the requirements of the measure and submitting information to the website. And so that too would be a fiscal impact, but largely unknown, just not sure how many people are going to participate.
And colleagues, so, we just now got that fiscal statement, so we didn't know it was coming right now. But we are only in a public hearing, and I would hope that the three of you would work with the sponsor of the bill to see if we can get a little farther down the road towards his vision of this. So any questions, Ms. Tannell? All right, thank you very much. I will close the public hearing on 2946. And yes,
I just want to
Erin says we can adjourn.